Okay, good morning, everybody. We're going to get started this morning. Today, we're going to have a talk in radiology. Dr. A.J. Lewis, who's one of our radiologists here with the Boca Radiology Group, is going to give us a talk on incidentalomas in radiology. Dr. Lewis graduated from Vanderbilt University for undergrad, and then for medical school, he went to Emory University, where he got his doctorate in medicine and also a master's in business. He is a radiologist with a special interest in body MRI, and in fact did a body MRI fellowship at Stanford. It is my pleasure to welcome him this morning on incidentalomas in radiology.
Thank you so much. I'm going to be working two computers here, so if I don't move one along, just grab me, because we had problems with the projector start with. So I don't have any disclosures. So why did I pick to talk about incidental findings in radiology? Well, incidental findings are everywhere. From this article from the Wall Street Journal in 2014, incidental findings are found in about a third of imaging tests that were looked at from Massachusetts General from the emergency room, and about half of those end up not being followed up on. Since I've been here for 2 years, I've been subpoenaed in two lawsuits related to incidental findings that were missed. One was a pulmonary nodule that was found on a CT from a primary care doctor. It was seen by the radiologist, recommended follow-up. 3 years later, the patient came to the emergency room here and now had widely metastatic cancer. The other one was an ovarian cyst, complex ovarian cyst, and a young patient, you know, was recommended follow-up, wasn't followed up, and that turned into an aggressive neoplasm over time. So it's something that we have to pay attention to, and it's something that you can open yourself up to liability if you don't follow them up. Why are they not followed up? Well, because there's a lot of them, the recommendations are always changing, and it can be relatively confusing topic as to what to do, and there's wide variation in practice style. So today we're going to talk about on CT and MRI of the abdomen and pelvis, adrenal incidental lesions, pancreatic cysts, everyone's favorite topic, cystic renal lesions, high-risk and low-risk liver lesions, splenic lesions, lymph node findings, CT of adnexal lesions, CT of incidental gallbladder findings, and then on ultrasound, again, adnexal cysts and other adnexal lesions, thyroid nodules, solid and now subsolid pulmonary nodules, some incidental vascular findings, aneurysm, and other abdominal vascular findings, and then I'm also going to add in incidental brain findings, meningiomas, and pituitary adenomas. So as I said, I'm working two computers, and I was here till midnight last night and then was up most of the night with this guy who's teething, so if anything is confusing, feel free to stop me, and we can talk about it. I left some time at the end for questions. I tried to make it a little bit shorter so that we could have some time for questions, because I know this topic can be confusing for everyone. So the way that I tried to set these up was, and hopefully with the projector, at least everyone can kind of follow along. I don't know which mouse I can use. I guess this one. Because I can't do both at once. But I try to set these up in flowcharts, because that's sort of the way that I systematically approach them. I think that that's a good way to sort of approach these incidental findings. Also, these slides, if you want to have them, you know, on your phone in case you don't know when to follow up something, will be available through the library. So starting out with incidental adrenal lesions. So we really have recommendations only for adrenal lesions more than 1 centimeter. There's no clear recommendation if you see an adrenal nodule that's less than 1 centimeter. In a low-risk patient, these probably are benign and don't need to be followed. In a higher-risk patient, the recommendations are a little bit more personal, specific. You're welcome to follow them, or you could do another more advanced test like MRI. PET or biopsy would be difficult since these are such small lesions. So in an incidental adrenal lesion over 1 centimeter, if the imaging features are diagnostic, for example, if there's clear fat in the lesion, that's a myelolipoma, that doesn't need further follow-up. If on a non-contrast CT, the imaging attenuation is less than 10 Hounsfield units, which is a measure of density that we use, and that's an adenoma, also doesn't require further follow-up. If the imaging features are not diagnostic and the lesion is between 1 and 4 centimeters, kind of following this algorithm, if the patient's had prior imaging and the lesion is stable at a year, then it's benign. No further follow-up is necessary. Obviously, if it's getting bigger, that's concerning, and we would have concern for malignancy, and you'd consider biopsy or resection. If there is no prior imaging and no history of cancer, why is it doing that? And if the imaging features are benign, then you can presume that it's benign, but you would probably do at least one follow-up CT or MR in a year. If it has suspicious imaging features, so what would that be? That would be, we use the enhancement characteristics of an adrenal nodule to determine if it's suspicious, as well as obviously if there's necrosis or invasion of adjacent structures. If on this CT there's no enhancement, you know, on a multiphasic CT, if there's no enhancement within the adrenal lesion, then that's a cyst or an old hemorrhage, that doesn't need follow-up. If the washout is what we consider to be a high washout, so we use the early enhancement phase and then a delayed phase, so this is a multi-phase, multi-scan CT, so higher radiation, keep that in mind. If the washout characteristics are diagnostic for adenoma, then you don't need any further follow-up. If the washout characteristics are indeterminate, and I'll show an example of that, you might consider biopsy or an MRI. MRI is ultimately better for these incidental adrenal findings because MRI is sensitive to the presence of microscopic fat, which is characteristic for adenoma. We have a sequence called in and out of phase that really is the ideal test for adenoma and very high specificity. So here we have low attenuation, non-contrast CT, adrenal lesion less than 4 centimeters. If it was greater than 4 centimeters, I didn't talk about that on the prior slide, pretty much any lesion, adrenal lesion that's greater than 4 centimeters isn't really an incidental finding, and that's almost certainly going to be resected. Here we have a low attenuation adrenal lesion, less than 10 Hounsfield units. This is an adenoma, no follow-up, no further workup needed. Here we have an adrenal protocol CT with a lesion that's enhancing to 88 Hounsfield units. On the delayed, it measures 43 Hounsfield units. This would be less than the 60% washout criteria, so this would be indeterminate. This would be a good case for an MRI or a biopsy. On MRI, this still turned out to be an adenoma. So moving on to, as I said, everyone's favorite incidental finding. This is incidental cystic pancreatic lesion. These pancreatic cysts and IPMNs that everyone loves. So this is a new criteria that we've relatively recently come up with, and in these lesions, the criteria are always changing. But basically, we divide these by size. If it's less than 2 centimeters, we recommend a single follow-up MRI. If the lesion is stable, then it's benign and no further follow-up is necessary. Some people believe that these, like, as we'll see, a ground glass nodule should be followed for longer periods of time or should be followed forever. The current guidelines state that, you know, if they have one stable MRI, that's probably enough. If the patient is concerned, you could do a second follow-up MRI. That would be reasonable. If the lesion obviously grows, then that becomes concerning and would move them up into the higher risk category, which would be these 2 to 3 centimeter cystic lesions. Usually these are followed with MRI. CT is not as good for these. This is something that you definitely want to do an MRI. If the lesion is indeterminate, then you know it's not clearly a side branch cystic neoplasm, then you would do yearly follow-up on that. Again, the reason that we do follow up these yearly is because we often don't see the clear communication with the pancreatic duct that can make it a diagnostic side branch IPMN. If you see that clear, that clear communication with the duct, but remember now these lesions are 2 to 3 centimeters, then with a cystic lesion that arises from the duct, higher risk. Usually the side branch cystic IPMNs that we see are very small, less than a centimeter even. If you see one that's 2 to 3 centimeters, you want to follow that a little bit more aggressively every 6 months for 2 years. And if the lesion has characteristics classic for serous cystadenoma, which I'll show an example of, then that would be followed up every 2 years. When these lesions get to be greater than 3 centimeters, we start considering resection if it's a serous cystadenoma, or aspiration as usually more than 3 centimeters. It's not a side branch IPMN. It's more likely a pancreatic pseudocyst from prior pancreatitis. Here we see a lesion that's an indeterminate cystic pancreatic lesion. This one we see a clear communication to the pancreatic duct, so this almost certainly is a side branch IPMN. Less than 2 centimeters, we would do at least one follow-up in a year. Here we have a lesion that has classic features for serous cystadenoma. This one has a central calcification with thick septations. This lesion's greater than 4 centimeters, even though these lesions are benign. When they get to be greater than 4 centimeters, they have a risk of being serous cystadenocarcinoma, and therefore we would also probably do a resection for pathologic purposes. So here we have, moving on to indeterminate cystic renal masses, we use what's called the Bosniak criteria. Bosniak's a radiologist at NYU. He came up with a criteria system 10 or 20 years ago, which demonstrates different features of renal cysts and their prognostic features. So a Bosniak 1 lesion is a simple renal cyst. We see these on almost everyone. These are benign, no further follow-up necessary. Bosniak 2 cyst has a thin septation, 1 or 2 thin septations, possibly with a small amount of calcification within the septations, no enhancement. Bosniak 2F was a criteria that was come up with after the initial staging, which was originally only Bosniak 1 through 4. This is for an indeterminate cystic lesion. This lesion, and I'll show an example, has perceptible, so enhancement that you can see, but too small, the enhancement is too thin within a septation for you to draw an ROI and clearly prove the enhancement. Those are the ones that we're going to follow up. Bosniak 3 and 4, these are with thick nodular enhancing septations or solid renal neoplasms. These are surgery. These aren't something that you're going to be following up. These are cancer. So another flow chart for the incidental renal masses. So we talked about the Bosniak criteria. Bosniak 1 or 2, those are benign. You're done. Bosniak 2F, in the general population, so relatively low-risk patients, you would get a CT at 6 and 12 months. So 2 6-month follow-ups, and then yearly for 5 years. If they don't change, then it's benign, no further follow-up necessary. If it changes or enlarges, then obviously that would be something that would be surgical in nature. If the patient has a Bosniak 3 or 4 lesion, again, we said that those are going to be cancer, and so those are almost always going to require surgery unless the patient isn't a surgical candidate. Here we see a Bosniak category 2F cyst. This is a non-contrast on the left and a post-contrast on the right. Here we see, I think I can convince you, there's some enhancement within septations from the non-contrast to the post-contrast imaging, but this is too thin to be measured by a region of interest. So this would be a Bosniak category 2F. About 20% of these turn out to be cancer, and the follow-up in 6 months is recommended. So moving to incidental liver lesions on CT, something we see all the time, we again divide these by size and characteristics. If the lesion's less than 0.5 centimeters, these are these tiny, also show too small to characterize liver lesions we describe all the time in reports. If the patient's lower average risk here on the left, then this is benign with no further follow-up. If they're high risk, so they have a history of primary malignancy, or they have known cirrhosis or a acute liver injury like hepatitis or some sort of syndrome, then that would be move the patient up into the larger category, which is 0.5 to 1.5 centimeters. Again, if these have benign features, if they're cysts or clearly hemangiomas, then it's at any risk level is benign with no further follow-up necessary. If they do have suspicious imaging features, and suspicious imaging features would be high attenuation, high density, ill-defined margins, don't classically fit the criteria for cyst or hemangioma, then we would recommend follow-up of those lesions. For flash-filling lesions, so these are lesions that are avidly arterial-enhancing, moving over here, in a lower average risk patient, these are almost certainly going to be flash-filling hemangiomas. In a high-risk patient, neuroendocrine tumor is one of the classic things that that arterially enhances avidly, and those we would recommend either follow-up or further imaging with MRI or PET. If the lesion is over a centimeter and a half, so these are bigger lesions, again, we see large liver cysts and hemangiomas all the time. If it's classic for those entities, then no further follow-up is necessary. If there are some imaging features that aren't classic for cyst or hemangioma, in a low-risk patient, we would follow these up, usually with CT or MRI, probably in 1 year. If the patient is high risk, then we could consider biopsy or PET CT, for example, if they have a history of primary malignancy. And if it's a flash-filling arterially enhancing lesion, FNH arterially enhances, if these are larger lesions, I'll show an example, then that might require follow-up over 4 centimeters with adenomas. Usually we would resect those because of the risk of bleeding, or at least change their medications if they're on oral contraceptives. So looking at some of these examples, here's these two small to characterize lesions that we see all the time on hepatic CT and MR. These are less than a centimeter. This was an interesting study that I found, which showed 1,500 patients who had an abdominal CT example, an examination. About 20% of these patients had these incidental liver cystic lesions that were less than a centimeter. In 45 patients with a known malignancy, these were actually without a known malignancy, these were actually biopsied, and all of the lesions were benign. In 209 patients with a known malignancy, they obviously did more biopsies in the higher risk patients. Of 86 of these patients that had only one too small to characterize lesion, even in patients with known malignancy, these were almost all benign. In 74 patients who had 2 to 4 of these little incidental lesions, 20% were cancer. But when you got to over 5 lesions in a patient with known malignancy, about 80% of these turned out to be cancer. And so that was something that we, you know, you have to keep in mind. And maybe we should report that there are, you know, not just they're numerous, or we should actually say the number of too small to characterize lesions. Hypervascular liver lesions, here I'll show two. The first one has peripheral nodular discontinuous progressive enhancement on the top. So on the arterial phase, you see progressive enhancement as the contrast in the time goes on. That's classic for hemangioma. No further follow-up would be necessary for that. On the bottom, we see a lesion with the classic central scar, lobulated arterial enhancement, which fades to background on delayed imaging. That is a focal nodular hyperplasia. Again, that probably would not require follow-up. If it was an adenoma of that size, you might consider doing some either follow-up or something more aggressive because of the risk of bleeding. FNH doesn't bleed. So another topic, looking at CT and MRI of cystic adnexal masses. Again, this is something that's changing. We become less aggressive over time with following these lesions. We divide these by age group or menopausal category, as well as the characteristics of the cystic adnexal mass. So with benign cystic lesions in the adnexa, if the patient is premenopausal and the lesion's less than 5 centimeters, no follow-up necessary, leave it alone. If the lesion's over 5 centimeters in a premenopausal female, you would probably do an ultrasound follow-up at 6 to 12 weeks. Usually these will resolve, they're usually physiologic, but just to make sure that we're not missing something, you would do, with over 5 centimeters, you would do an additional follow-up ultrasound. In an early postmenopausal female, we have 3 categories, less than 3 centimeters, so 3 and 5 are your key numbers. Less than 3 centimeters, it's benign, no further follow-up necessary. Between 3 and 5 centimeters, you'd want to do an ultrasound follow-up at 6 to 12 months. Over 5 centimeters, you might think about referring them to gynecologic oncology. In a late postmenopausal female, 3 centimeters is abnormal. Less than 3 centimeters, you leave it alone. More than 3 centimeters, send them to gynon. In a lesion that doesn't have classic, simple cystic features, this would be something that has a hemorrhage within it or something that has irregular borders. We might be a little bit more aggressive with that. In a premenopausal female, sort of moving the risk categories down, less than 3 centimeters, still no follow-up necessary. Between 3 and 5 centimeters, we would do an ultrasound follow-up at 6 to 12 weeks. Over 5 centimeters, even in a premenopausal woman, if the cyst has suspicious features, then we would do probably a referral to gyn-onc. just to make sure we weren't missing a malignancy. In an early postmenopausal female, less than 3 centimeters, we leave it alone, no further follow-up. Over 3 centimeters, we would do ultrasound follow-up or biopsy. In a late postmenopausal female, anything with that's not clearly a cyst that's over a centimeter should be referred to gyn-onc, because that's, you know, at late postmenopausal patients in their 70s and 80s, they shouldn't have cysts in their adnexa, that especially if they have suspicious features. We have this category of other imaging features. A lot of adnexal cystic lesions like dermoid or hemorrhagic cyst or endometrioma have classic imaging features. I'll show some of those on ultrasound. Those you would manage as appropriate depending on what the diagnosis is. You can make the diagnosis with CT. If the features aren't specific, then you could consider additional ultrasound follow-up or biopsy, or at least gynecologic oncology referral. Moving on to ultrasound of cystic adnexal lesions, looking at the normal appearance of the ovary. This is a normal premenopausal female ovary with some adnexal follicles, all less than 3 centimeters. That's a normal ovary, no follow-up necessary. Here we have a premenopausal patient with a hemorrhagic lesion with a ring of fire vascularity around it. That's a corpus luteum cyst. Again, no further follow-up necessary, normal ovary. Third image is a normal postmenopausal ovary, no follicles, and small in appearance. That's normal, no follow-up needed. And then here we have a less than 1 centimeter cyst or follicle in a postmenopausal patient. Again, if it's less than 1 centimeter, still requires no follow-up. Cyst with benign characteristics. Here, this is a cyst with well-defined margins, clearly just fluid attenuation. Fluid density, I would say. This again, we talked about the size criteria. If it's under 5 centimeters in a premenopausal female, no follow-up necessary. Over 5 centimeters, we would follow it. In a postmenopausal female, we separate it into early and late postmenopausal. If it's less than 3 centimeters in a early postmenopausal, or less than 1 centimeter in a late postmenopausal female, you would not need to do anything. If it's more than that, you would probably consider follow-up or referral. Classic hemorrhagic cyst on ultrasound with these thin, dense, hyperechoic septations. Again, if it's less than 5 centimeters in a premenopausal female, no follow-up necessary. Over 5 centimeters, we would do a follow-up, usually in 6 weeks. Endometrioma, this shows classic homogeneous internal echogenicity. This is one of these classic diagnostic pathognomonic features, so this one we would probably do a follow-up. Obviously, if the patient is symptomatic, then we would consider referral to a gynecologist for surgical or other medical treatments for the endometriosis. Here we have a dermoid with calcification within it. This, again, is pathognomonic for this entity, and the follow-up would be based on the recommendation for treatment of dermoids. Hydrosalpinx and peritoneal inclusion cysts, two lesions that aren't ovarian in nature, but you'll see it's cystic or fluid in the adnexa, which we follow as necessary for those entities. Moving on to more worrisome ultrasound features within cystic adnexal lesions. Here's a lesion that's not classic for cyst or endometrioma, sort of a mix between the two. In a reproductive age female, we probably still would do a follow-up in 6 weeks. Here we have a lesion with a single thin cyst that's not well, just a simple well-circumscribed cyst. Probably would follow that up and at least in 6 weeks. With multiple thin septations or nodules that appear solid, that would be very worrisome for malignancy, and we would start considering surgical evaluation. And then the classic lesions in the adnexa that have cystic and solid components, those are malignancy. The one that I was in the lawsuit or subpoenaed in the law to testify in the lawsuit was something that was really more of a simple cyst with 1 or 2 thin septations. And that lesion was recommended follow-up. Really looking at the initial imaging, I see how they said, okay, there's 1 or 2 thin septations. But then within, I think it was 2 years, when the patient came back, they had something that was more solid. Those little 1 or 2 septations turned into thick nodular septations. And at that point, the patient had peritoneal carcinomatosis. Another favorite topic of everyone, management of thyroid nodules. These we are seeing all the time, and the recommendations are always changing. Everyone loves thyroid nodules, so I'll try to keep this one relatively algorithmic and relatively simple. If the lesion is over a centimeter and has microcalcifications, I'll show an example of that. Then those are very highly specific for malignancy. Those should be biopsied at a centimeter. At a centimeter and a half, if the lesion is solid or almost entirely solid, then that would be for biopsy. Pretty much any lesion you see that has any solid components or septations, at 2 centimeters, pretty much any thyroid nodule you should biopsy. If the lesion grows from the prior ultrasound, then we should consider biopsy. If the lesion's almost entirely cystic and no growth and no suspicious features, then probably ultrasound-guided FNA is unnecessary. I've seen a lot of these, you know, papillary thyroid cancer is relatively low risk in the scheme of cancers, but people, you know, I've tended to become more aggressive with biopsying these thyroid nodules. Just keep in mind that over 2 centimeters, pretty much anything should be biopsied, and if it has suspicious features like microcalcifications at a centimeter, you would biopsy it. If there are multiple nodules, usually I recommend biopsy of the dominant nodule with recommendations for the other nodules pending biopsy results. Here's an example of a case with thyroid microcalcifications. All these little bright spots are the microcalcifications. This lesion has irregular borders, which looks like it's growing into the tissues around. This was a papillary thyroid cancer. Another favorite topic, management of pulmonary nodules. This one I would pay attention to because the recommendations just came out for 2017, and they're significantly different from what we've been doing in the past. So basically the big change is that any nodule under 6 millimeters doesn't need to be followed. It used to be we were following 4 and 5 millimeter pulmonary nodules. Anything under 6 millimeters doesn't need to be followed. At less than 6 millimeters in a low risk patient, you don't need follow up. At a high risk patient, so this is a patient with known malignancy, that kind of goes outside of the Fleischner criteria, those you would consider an optional CT at 12 months. Again, not required by the criteria. This would be patients also with underlying emphysema or a personal history of cancer, occupational exposures like asbestos, or chronic interstitial fibrotic lung disease. So again, less than 6 millimeters, no required follow-up. In a high-risk patient, you could consider a follow-up at 12 months. In nodules that are between 6 to 8 millimeters, for both low and high risk patients, we would recommend a follow-up CT at 6 to 12 months and then an additional CT at 18 to 24 months. Over 8 millimeters, this is when we start getting concerned, and a low risk patient over 8 millimeters probably would do a CT at 3 months. Over a centimeter probably would do a PET CT for both low and risk, high risk patients. Patients with multiple nodules, so those are patients with a solitary pulmonary nodule, Even with patients with multiple pulmonary nodules less than 6 millimeters, no follow-up necessary. At greater than 6 but less than 8 millimeters in low and high-risk patients, we would do a follow-up at 3 to 6 months and additional at 18 to 24 months. And for lesions greater than 8 millimeters, you probably do a 3-month follow-up, over a centimeter, probably a PET CT. So this is another favorite category of everyone, is the subsolid or ground glass nodules. So again, keep in mind, 6 millimeters, that's a key thing I'm going to keep harping on because that's a new change to the recommendations. Less than 6 millimeters, no follow-up necessary. For purely ground glass nodules, so this is a nodule that's sort of ill-defined, hazy, no solid components, CT at 6 to 12 months to confirm that it persists, because a lot of these are inflammatory, then a CT every 2 years for 5 years. If the lesion has solid components, that's a more concerning feature, so you might do a follow-up at 3 to 6 months, and then annual CTs for 5 years. Here's an example at the bottom of a ground glass nodule, which developed over time. At 6 months, there started to be some solid components, and then at 12 months, this became frank adenocarcinoma. Almost all of these ground glass nodules are some spectrum of adenocarcinoma in situ. They used to be called bronchoalveolar carcinoma, but they are very slow growing and relatively low risk of metastatic disease. Often the risks of treatment outweigh the benefits. Moving on to incidental vascular findings, I'll try to keep these relatively straightforward. basically abdominal aortic aneurysms, really it has to be 3 centimeters to call it an aneurysm. At 3 centimeters, you follow it every 3 years. At 3.5 centimeters, every 2 years. At 4 centimeters, every 1 year. At 4.5 centimeters, you start thinking about treatment. 5 centimeters, you almost certainly would treat it. Iliac aneurysms, again, 3 centimeters is the criteria. Less than 3 centimeters, no explicit recommendations are made. Between 3 and 3.5 centimeters, probably a 6-month follow-up, and at 3.5 centimeters, you start considering treatment. For penetrating aortic ulcers, we'll usually mention these in the report. If the patient is asymptomatic, these have a risk of dissection or perforation. They also can develop into aneurysms or other complications. Usually we'd follow these yearly. Splenic artery aneurysms, 2 centimeters is the threshold. At over 2 centimeters, we would consider treatment. Less than 2 centimeters, you might recommend follow-up. Renal aneurysms, between 1 and 1.5 centimeters, you would recommend follow-up. At over 1.5 centimeters, these usually would be treated surgically or endovascularly. Quickly, some other incidental abdominal vascular findings. For pancreatic or duodenal aneurysms, these are uncommon, but over 2 centimeters, we usually treat them. For abdominal venous thrombosis, again, about 2% of patients have abdominal venous thrombosis, portal venous or superior mesenteric venous thrombosis, and are asymptomatic. There's not an explicit treatment recommendation for these, but you know, obviously anticoagulation would be a clinical consideration based on their symptoms. We often see, incidentally, pelvic congestion syndrome, so engorged veins in the pelvis. We see Mae-Thurner anatomy, which is basically compression of the iliac veins by the iliac arteries, and nutcracker syndrome, incidentally, as other incidental vascular findings. These aren't recommended to be followed in an asymptomatic patient. Getting towards the end, incidental lymph node findings, benign imaging features. I'll show some examples on incidental lymph nodes. No further follow-up necessary. If there are suspicious imaging features, so over 1 centimeter in short axis is what we use as a criteria, and there's prior imaging available. If the lymph nodes are stable for a year, then no further follow-up necessary. If they're not stable, then you would consider biopsy. If there's no prior imaging available, the patient has a history of malignancy and suspicious lymph nodes, you'd do biopsy or PET CT. If there's no history of malignancy, you would worry about lymphoproliferative disorder and correlate with labs. Here we see an example of a node that's just barely 1 centimeter but has some suspicious features. I don't know if it projects well enough, but there's maybe some central hypodensity and sort of irregular margins. And this actually, even though it was relatively small, turned out to be a testicular cancer metastasis. Incidental splenic lesions, I'll show a couple examples of these. If the imaging features are diagnostic, such as a cyst or hemangioma, no follow-up necessary. If the imaging features are not diagnostic, if the lesion is heterogeneous or indeterminate attenuation, if there's prior imaging, stability, that's a key feature of my whole talk, look for prior imaging, because if any of these things are stable, that might avoid you having to do more follow-up. If it's growing, then that's obviously concerning and you'd want to do PET or biopsy. If there's no prior imaging, no history of cancer, but suspicious imaging features, you'd probably want to do an additional test, PET, MRI, or biopsy. If the imaging features are indeterminate, then follow-up imaging would be recommended. And in patients with history of cancer, if the splenic lesion is less than 1 centimeter, you'd follow. If over 1 centimeter, you would do PET, MRI, or biopsy. Here we have a patient that has GI primary with multiple hepatic lesions, multiple splenic lesions. These turned out to be metastases. Quickly talking about 2 brain entities where you find incidental findings. Here we have a patient with a large pituitary heterogeneous enhancing nodule. This is a pituitary macroadenoma. So the macroadenomas, the ones that are enlarging the actual pituitary itself, we follow at 6 months. Microadenomas, these are the ones that are often hormone secreting, subcentimeter, those we would follow at 1 year. Meningioma, the British Medical Society practice guidelines recommend follow-up of all meningiomas for 1 year. We probably see incidental meningiomas in 5 to 10% of our brain MRIs, so this is something to keep in mind, and people always ask, you know, how often should we follow these? I think yearly follow-up is probably sufficient. Incidental gallbladder findings, getting towards the end. gallstones, if you see on a patient that's asymptomatic, no follow-up necessary, just let them know if they could pass a gallstone and they could have pain related to that. Gallbladder wall calcification, if it's diffuse, that's porcelain gallbladder, there's an elevated risk of cancer. Those are usually resected, so that's not something that you would follow. If you have gallbladder sludge, so dense gallbladder contents, no follow-ups necessary. We see gallbladder sludge all the time. Diffuse gallbladder wall thickening, usually related to systemic disease, and no further follow-up is necessary. If there's focal gallbladder wall thickening or a mass, this is usually polyp, can be cancer. Usually this would be referred to a surgeon. Gallbladder polyps are a common thing we get asked, when do we follow these? If it's less than 6 millimeters, we don't have to follow it. Between 7 and 9 millimeters, we follow up yearly, and over a centimeter, usually those will be surgery. So less than 6 millimeters, no follow-up, more than a centimeter, surgery. Pericholecystic fluid, that's again a kind of a nonspecific finding, and we would recommend correlation with the patient's clinical symptoms. A distended gallbladder, again, not something that's specific, that needs specific follow-up. And pancreatic or common biliary or intrahepatic dilation, if the common bile duct is over 6 millimeters in a patient with a gallbladder or over 10 millimeters in a patient without a gallbladder, that's abnormal and would need additional imaging, probably with MRCP. Here's an incidental gallbladder polyp. This lesion is 8 millimeters. Here's the testing portion. So 8 millimeter gallbladder polyp, when will we follow this up? A year, exactly. So less than 6 millimeters, no follow-up, 7 to 9 millimeters, follow-up at a year, and over a centimeter, we would resect it. Just checking to make sure you guys are still paying attention. So recap. So management of incidental findings is confusing, always changing. Maybe keep a copy of this PowerPoint or some of the flowcharts on your phone. If you aren't sure when to follow a lesion, call us. We're always here 24 hours a day, 7340. The key points are no need to follow up pulmonary nodules less than 6 millimeters, and follow up is recommended for any ovarian cysts over 3 centimeters in a postmenopausal female and over 5 centimeters in a premenopausal female. Thank you. So any questions?
Sure, go ahead.
So I think that there's two components to that. One would be, obviously, if it's growing, at any lesion that's growing, I would say would refer for cystic for EUS. I think that's a reasonable approach. If the lesion's just on the first imaging study, I think probably over 3 centimeters, we would say that's definitely suspicious and would recommend recommend some sort of further diagnostic workup. Usually we reserve percutaneous treatment for these patients that are developing clearly pseudocysts. We try not to percutaneously aspirate things that have any features that are suspicious for neoplasm.
The other ominous features are those neuromodules.
Yes, any sort of solid components or enhancement within the lesion. So the things that we worry about with pancreatic cystic lesions that we worry about happening, the three things I always mention in my reports, are is there any main duct dilation? Because if it's main duct dilation, that usually means that there's a malignant component. Is there any solid enhancing component? So that's obviously concerning. Or is there any peripancreatic adenopathy? So if any of those three things are present, those would be things that I would worry about. I would mention in my report, well, mention in the impression, and those would be things that I might move towards some sort of additional imaging or additional treatment recommendation.
And just one other question.
Sure. Sure.
When would you proceed with a percutaneous or other type of biopsy?
So obviously, you know, for hepatocellular carcinoma, it's uncommon that those would happen in a normal morphology liver. almost always adenomas you would see in a normal morphology liver. So that's one thing that we would sort of comment on. You know, arterially enhancing liver lesion in a patient with cirrhosis is HCC until proven otherwise. Now, the new recommendations say those don't even need biopsy. Adenoma, usually we would diagnose, these are usually in younger patients, usually the differential consideration would be FNH, and we have a specific MRI contrast material that we can use called EVIST, which is very specific to differentiate between adenoma and FNH. As these adenomas get larger, one entity that's in a normal liver in a younger patient that starts to come into play would be fibrolamellar hepatocellular carcinoma, which happens in young, relatively healthy patients. Those are very hard to distinguish from adenoma on any imaging test, and those are usually where everyone's sort of surprised when it turns out to be that. But those, again, would be something that would be growing atypically rapidly, not responding to conservative treatment, like taking the patient off hormones or things like that. So if something's growing and we don't have an explanation, then that would be something that we would consider additional treatment. Go ahead.
Why are we not following 6-millimeter lung nodules in high-risk patients?
So as the data has come out, the Fleischner Society, which is the main body in radiology, which basically their whole purpose is to collect data on pulmonary nodules and make recommendations, has said that less than 6-millimeter pulmonary nodules, that the risk, that's where the radiation risk versus the benefit has, as we've done thousands and thousands and tens of thousands more of these scans, has sort of shaken out. So it's something that we've actually, when they first came out, the data suggested that 4 and 5 millimeter nodules did have a higher risk of becoming cancer versus the risk of the radiation. But as we've gotten larger and larger sample sizes and they've been tracking this data aggressively, the recommendation has changed, because just the statistical percentage of these nodules that turn out to be cancer is extremely low at 4 and 5 millimeters. I saw another question back here.
Yeah, is there a difference between smoking status if the patients are not smokers or non-smokers?
That was the low risk, high risk category, but at less than 6 millimeters, the recommendation is still that they don't need follow up. In a high risk patient with these smaller nodules, 4 or 5 millimeters, it is reasonable. No one would fault you for doing one follow up CT at a year in these 4 or 5 millimeter nodules in a very high risk patient. But it, again, no one would fault you if you didn't follow it. Any other questions? For pulmonary nodules, unfortunately, that's one area that the MRI is not great for. I train in California, as we spoke about, and they actually have legislation there that's coming down that says that's trying to reduce the use of CT. And they have said that any patient that comes in should get first a non-radiation-based test prior to CT, and in order to get a CT, the patient needs to have a specific question that can't be answered by MRI or ultrasound. And everyone, when that first came out, said, oh my gosh, this is, that's crazy that you're not going to use CT anymore. Realistically, most questions that you think about, all of these things, could be answered by MRI or ultrasound. There's cost issues, there's 45 minutes in the magnet time that people think about. But realistically, almost everything can be answered by all the lesions we talked about, adnexal lesions, cystic pancreatic lesions, adrenal lesions, all could be answered by MRI. Gallbladder findings all could be, really with ultrasound. But pulmonary nodules is one that really, these subcentimeter pulmonary nodules is one thing that is really tough to follow with MRI. So that's one kind of exception that was made to the rule, was to follow pulmonary nodules. We did a lot more MRI out in California than we do here, and we also probably did more ultrasound, but definitely almost all of these cancers that were being followed with CT, with chest, abdomen, pelvis CTs, were then being followed with chest, abdomen, pelvis MRI. Well, thank you guys so much.